Yeah, and it stays fresh is the thing. Like, you can look at it as like, oh, it was in the year, but then what, 10 years later now, or almost 11 this year,
right?
It's still, things will happen and things will come up and you're like, oh, that's just as fresh as it was, seriously, you know, day after. So, you know, it's a process, like that grieving process. It doesn't stop, and it's just, how can you integrate that into your life, and how can you like make that part of who you are now? Because it's not like you're gonna get over it or forget it, you know. And which I was afraid of doing for a long time, of forgetting the way that felt, or the way that it felt to be in love in that way. And yeah, you don't forget it. You just sort of like incorporate it and then appreciate it as it comes up anew each new time, or each new day, I guess.
Welcome to Curious Goldfish, a podcast community where music and curiosity come together through interesting conversations with the music makers of our world. I'm your host, Jason English. You can find Curious Goldfish in all the major podcast and social media platforms. And of course, we have all of our content on our website, curiousgoldfish.com. Jacob Furr is a 38-year-old singer-songwriter from Fort Worth, Texas, who makes you feel like you've been best buddies forever. Maybe it's our mutual love and respect for many of the same musicians and music. Maybe it's our upbringing in the American Evangelical Church, a shared experience that we are both slightly embarrassed by and also partially enamored with. Our connection can't be facial hair. His beard runs circles around mine. And of course, it can't be around shared musical ability, because he is all of that and I have none of it. Whatever it is, I am so incredibly grateful that Jacob reached out to me when I first launched this podcast, just wanting to gauge my interest in a chat with him. I had just published an episode with Vanessa Peters, who Jacob talks to often. And while I am able to do remote interviews, it's always best to meet in person and try to build some sort of camaraderie face to face. And that's exactly what happened. And I hope that connection comes across as you listen to us talk about the music scene in Fort Worth, the album he released last year called Turning, and the tragic story of losing his wife to brain cancer when he was just in his 20s. He performs the title track to that album for us, a signal of hope to the world that you can emerge from tragedy and heartbreak, even though those feelings of despair never really leave. I wish I lived closer to Jacob. He's someone that you can picture yourself just hanging out with, and it would be a thoughtful conversation with a hell of a lot of laughs. I know it's just not me. I imagine he makes so many people feel like best friends forever, just after a few minutes. I'm excited to introduce him to you today, Jacob Furr of Fort Worth, Texas. Let's dive in. Jacob, it's really nice to meet you.
It's really nice to meet you, Jason. Thanks for having me in your hotel room.
It's a little weird, but, you know, everybody that's listening, don't worry. You know, we just wanted some privacy.
It's very soundproofed in here.
Yeah, it's good. I'm here. Yeah, we're in Dallas. I'm here. I have a day job. And I thought I'd sneak in an interview, obviously nights and weekends, just make sure my boss isn't freaking out. But yeah, so you live in Fort Worth.
I do live in Fort Worth. Yeah,
you grew up there, right?
I grew up there. Yeah. I was born there in '86, and then moved to San Francisco in like 2010, I think, for a little bit, and then moved back here.
That's different. San Francisco's different.
Yeah, it was a big change. It was a good change. Needed it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's awesome. And and just watching you online and social media and stuff, like, you're really embedded into the, not just the music community of Fort Worth, but the community at large, right?
Yeah, I try to be, like, especially Fort Worth, because I just believe heavily in Fort Worth music and, like, the people that create over there. And so I try to do everything I can to support the other people like me. I mean, because it's, you know, it's an all boats sort of situation. Mm. I think we have a really high quality music scene over there that gets sort of overshadowed a lot by Dallas and Austin and all that kind of stuff. Right. So, but I think everybody, everything that we do over there is like on par with that sort of scene.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, even just this weekend, you guys did a Hometowns Fest.
Yeah, we did Hometowns Fest this weekend to sort of celebrate Towns Van Zandt, and that was, yeah, that's good. That's been, I think that's the 8th year that we've like officially done it, and this guy named Bruce Payne puts it on, and he, I mean, it's just all volunteer stuff. Like, he just loves towns so much that he puts that festival on every year. And it's not really a festival. It's more like a birthday celebration more than anything else. And then we do this like open mic on the last day of it. And everybody plays Towns Van Zandt songs and tries to bum each other out as hard as they can.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I didn't really, I mean, I guess I had heard his music. I didn't know really his story up until a few years ago. Did you see that Ken Burns documentary on country music?
No. Wait, the
on PBS.
Yes, yeah. The thing that I remember from that one was like the Carter family stuff. Like, right, I was obsessed with that, like first era of it, like, and just how interesting, like the Carter family specifically was, and how they collected all that stuff. But yeah, he does get into it a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, it was one of my favorite things on television that I've seen. But Towns actually, he's an important part of the history of country music.
Yeah, for sure.
Because he sort of represented that change into like more of the folk,
yeah, you know, he's like,
singer-songwriter kind of.
I think he like translated a lot from like sort of like what Dylan was doing. Like, because a lot of those dudes from Houston, they were like really into that like hippie beatnik culture. And it was like their, like down in Houston was like their version of San Francisco and their version of the Haight-Ashbury. So they're all kind of hippies, but they have that like Texas sort of, you got to wear the cowboy hat and the blue jeans sort of thing going on. So they never really fit too well into the country thing like that. They almost had to, just because of like the location where they were. It's my take on it anyways. So what I love about Towns is that like, yeah, he is this like transitional figure from like Dylan, who's doing this like pop rock thing, into this like country folk Americana, for lack of a better word, sort of thing. And he's, yeah, the poetry that he's using is like way more interesting than like the songwriting aspect of it, you know. So that's, yeah, neat. He's a fascinating character.
And he's from Fort Worth, right?
Yeah, he was born in Fort Worth. His family was like, Bruce is gonna get mad if I get this all wrong, the Van Zandt family basically like founded Fort Worth in a lot of ways, and like founded a bunch of stuff around here in Texas. They're a big money family from East Texas. So yeah, he was born in Fort Worth. His great granddad's cabin is like, you can go see his grant, like they preserved his cabin, so you can go like,
oh my gosh,
hang out at the Van Zandt cabin in town. It's really weird, but we've gone a long time without celebrating people like him. And like Ornette Coleman's from Fort Worth, which is like mind-blowing to, like, it's just never been a part of like the story that we've told about ourselves over there. So we're getting better at that through like places like here, Fort Worth, and the city itself is sort of like helping promote that and being like, hey, this is a part of our, like who we actually are in this town. So
that's neat. So what are the advantages of being an independent singer-songwriter in a place like Fort Worth? And then what are the disadvantages?
Oh, that's a good one. Advantages, it's real safe and it's real friendly. So you can kind of get away with whatever you want to get away with. You can try it. Like, I like to do lots of different things. So you don't have to like box yourself into anything at any point. It's just really supportive. And I think that's great for people. But the flip side of that is that it gets really insular, because everybody's just sort of swimming in the same pond, which we're breaking out of that. Like, that's been a problem in the past, I think, that like, if you were from Fort Worth or you came to Fort Worth, like you were just from Fort Worth. And it was just like, that we're really, really proud of being from Fort Worth, because we're not Dallas. Like, you know, we're like the little, it's that little brother syndrome. And so we're just like really proud to be from Fort Worth. And so now it's like, okay, we're proud to be from Fort Worth. Let's like export this out and like see, you know, let's all get a little bit more ambitious about what we're doing and, you know, sort of get out, like use the scene as like our home base, but sort of like get out of just playing the same five bars over and over again with everybody else.
That's good. What are some of the disadvantages?
I mean, that insularity, I think, would be the main disadvantage of it. It's not really, we're not super connected to the industry, right? But once again, we're changing all that. Like, we're there's a lot of work that we're putting into like changing that, like connecting people to sort of bigger things outside of us. I think the whole Leon Bridges thing like changed a lot of people's minds, but I don't know that it it in a lot of good ways, but also in a lot of bad ways too. It like made people like really focused on this like outward thing and like, you know, what can we get? Can we get Atlantic Records to come here?
Oh, right.
You know, that kind of thing. And it sort of, you know, I don't know. It's a good thing. It's a bad thing. Everything's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Fort Worth doesn't really pop into someone's head right away when you talk about the music industry.
No,
right?
Not at all.
Because it's usually, you know, Nashville, Memphis, Austin.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think like in this day and age, I would imagine, you know, I'm not part of the music industry, but for a long time, it's like, you know, I'm going to Nashville to like make it. Do you think you have to do that, you know, still or not really?
It depends on what you want. Like I say, I have a lot of friends that have done it, that have gone to Nashville specifically to like make it and to go do the 10-year town thing and write and, you know, and absolutely. And like I have friends that still live in Fort Worth that like tour with big bands and like, you know, from Nashville, and they fly up there and everything. So I think there's a connecting point between it. I don't think you have to do anything anymore. Yeah. Like you can be from anywhere and like connect with people these days. Like you can go to the conference, you can get on the plane, you can, you know, connect with them online. Like we were talking about earlier, like, right. You know, like I just sent you a message and like, let's talk. Like,
right.
You know, so there's, yeah, the geography thing, I don't think matters anymore. And I think it's more a matter of like Fort Worth sort of catching up mentally to that and not getting stuck in this like, well, we're from Fort Worth, and if you don't know us, you know, screw you, you know. Like, and now it's like, oh no, we're from Fort Worth, and we would really like you to all to like see what we're doing over here.
Yeah, seriously. Well, that's good. So, you know, we talked about the documentary. Like, part of that documentary was also about Willie Nelson, who, you know, he'd laid down in the middle of Broadway one night, basically trying to kill himself, I think, in Nashville because it was so difficult. And then, you know, he ended up coming back to Texas and the rest is history, right?
Did the thing.
Yeah. That was like 40 years ago or 50 years ago.
Yeah, and I have some friends that have considered that. Like, Nashville's rough. I've done Nashville like a couple, just have like dipped my toe in to like, oh, I'm going to go see, you know, met with like publishing people or whatever. And was like, I don't think I want to like do this, like, and that could be fear on my part, right. But it is like, it is very much, you know, yeah, if you're going to go up there, you have to be committed to the thing and do the thing. And I admire people that are and have been able to like make a life for themselves there, but for me personally, I was like, ah, I'm good.
That's hilarious. No, that's good.
Although if anybody wants to offer me a record deal from Nashville, I'll take it.
Yeah, good call. Well, cool. So last year you released a new album.
Mm-hmm. In September.
In September. And it was called Turning. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
It's called Turning. Put it out in September. Yeah. It was the third album of a cycle that I had been working on for a long time. So it was sort of like the end chapter to a long period of writing.
Yeah. Well, I think I need to make one comment and come back to the album, but it feels like much more positive than the previous ones. And by the way, in some of these other interviews, you sort of describe yourself as like Mr. Melancholy. I mean, I haven't laughed this hard even before the interview. Then
I think it comes out in the music a lot of times. Yeah,
you seem like a happy guy. I don't know.
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm a happy cynic. You know.
Yeah.
So,
but is the album is much more. It felt like a more positive outlook than the other ones.
Yeah, and that was like surprising, I think, in a lot of ways, because I knew that I wanted to finish the whole thing, but I hadn't intended on writing a happy album. I was just sort of still using writing as like a process for grieving, all this kind of stuff. And so it just sort of like ended up being that way, that like that's what was coming out as I was writing. And I was like, oh, I guess I should, this is the thread that connects this to those other things. It doesn't have to be some new thing. It actually does involve the past two records and how they all sort of fit together. So yeah.
Is it your own trilogy?
It's surprising to be happy.
No, I mean, you're like a totally happy guy.
Yeah,
Yeah, well, that's true. But it's your own. It's your own trilogy.
It is. Yeah, and I didn't mean to do that. Yeah. Like when I lived in San Francisco, I was talking about this yesterday at the Towns Fest. That was like my first introduction to Towns Van Zandt, and because I got a record. Or a bunch of records of his for my birthday one year up there. Anyways, long story short, that was when I like really wanted to start songwriting because I was obsessed with that in like 2010, and was like, I think I can do this. And so I started writing some stuff.
Wow.
And then, like life happens and some some bad things go down. You got to, you know, grieve through it and work through it. And that sort of became like how I did it was through the writing. It wasn't like it was like two separate things. It was one thing that kept going. And I didn't know when it would end or if it would stop or if it would be like the only thing that I ever wrote about for the rest of my life. But I was just writing through it just to try to get through it. And yeah, Turning ended up like it starts off real sad. That first song is like Balmoray, I think, is the first track on there. That's a really intense song for me emotionally. But then by the end, the equal and opposite emotion is happening too. Like it's this very like I'm ready to like go out and do things again, you know.
Well, it seems like the song Turning, it seems like that's the that's like a love song.
It is
to a new love, right?
Yeah, it is. And I don't think I wrote that specifically about any particular love. Like I'm in a wonderful relationship right now, and like it just the language of love works really well for that emotion of like I'm ready for something new. I'm ready to let you in. I'm ready to express myself, you know. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the grieving. I think you have it on your website. You lost your wife.
Yeah.
To brain cancer. You're in your late 20s?
In 2013. So that was been like 24, I think. Wow. No, 20s. I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, you're in your 20s. That's,
yeah,
that's
yeah, a lot. Like mid-20s. Yeah, it's a lot to deal
that's
with.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
And I think you did I listened to an interview that you did within a year of that happening. And I was like so impressed of, I forgot the name of the podcast, but it was like a radio show or something. And you
was
know,
it Country Fried Rock?
Yeah, it was Country Fried Rock. Yeah, yeah.
God,
yeah.
I love Sloan. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're on the phone or something, you know, you're remote, but I was like, oh my gosh, this guy is talking about like this thing. And it was fairly fresh.
Yeah. And it stays fresh is the thing. Like you can look at it as like, oh, it was in the year, but then like what, 10 years later now, or almost 11 this year.
Right.
It's still like, things will happen and things will come up and you're like, oh, that's just as fresh as it was, seriously, you know, day after. So, you know, it's a process, like that grieving process. It doesn't stop, and it's just, how can you integrate that into your life and how can you like make that part of who you are now? 'Cause it's not like you're gonna get over it or forget it, you know, like, right. And which I was afraid of doing for a long time, of like forgetting the way that felt, or the way that like it felt to be in love in that way. And yeah, you don't forget it. You just sort of like incorporate it and then appreciate it as it comes up anew, each new time or each new day, I guess.
From a songwriting perspective, did it change how you approached the process of that, or, you know, something that emotional and that tragic, or did it just, enhance your attention to the words and the emotions and things like that? Like, yeah, can you put your finger on anything?
Yeah, no, I think it, shoot, that's a good question. I don't know that it like enhanced the songwriting process necessarily as much as like the songwriting just gave me a way to like work it out. Like I listened to your Grace Pettis interview yesterday or day before, and like she said something about that, like that she uses it as like free therapy.
Right.
And I mean, if you're a musician, you have to have free therapy because you can't afford it otherwise. So it definitely very much is this like, how do I feel about this thing? My problem, and not to get too real about it, but like my problem with it is like, how real do you get about it in your writing? Like, are you like, how much space is there to put down like the rawest thing that you can put down? And then with the intent of either releasing it or keeping it for yourself, that's a really hard line to walk. And like Balmoray, that's a great example of that on the new record. I wrote that song a long time ago. Like that was like a very distinct memory of something that I wanted to remember. And so that's why it's like really emotional for me now to hear that song or play it or whatever. But it took me that long to like be comfortable presenting that to the world and being like, yeah, this is another memory. This is another way to kick off this like story that I'm trying to tell here. So, yeah, I don't know if that answered the question.
Yeah, that's good.
Rambling about
that. No. That makes sense. And I, you know, we talked about the hopefulness of the album compared to other ones. I think probably the most popular song on the new album is Take Care.
Mm-hmm.
What, like who's that message for?
I tell this as a joke at my shows, but it's actually true. I was dog sitting for a friend, and this is no joke. It like sounds like a joke, but it's legitimately true. I was dog sitting for a friend. He had a lazy boy that had like a USB phone charger in the side. And so I just sat there one day for like 6 hours in this chair and watched American Pickers. And like, there was a guitar on the wall, and like, just like pulled the guitar down and was just kind of goofing and wrote that song in that like time period of watching American Pickers.
Yes.
So it wasn't, I know it wasn't. And the thing was like, I don't know how it was. So that first line is take care of the things that get left behind. Like that was directly inspired from the show. Cause I was like really enjoying, you know, like these people's love for their heirlooms or whatever. And then from there, I just sort of peeled it apart and sort of like found out, you know, what else that line could like inspire you to say, you know? So yeah, I like people laugh it's meant to make people laugh because it's a funny story, but it's legitimately how I wrote that song.
Here I am thinking you had this like brilliant epiphany one day that you're going to inspire millions, and you're basically inspired by a bunch of like motorcycle parts and barns.
Yeah. Yeah. And I one of the episodes was my favorite is like the guys that like the old dudes that bring the pickers in.
Oh, right.
And they're like, oh yeah, come look at all my stuff. Yeah. I'll sell you something. And then they don't sell them anything because they're just like, I'm going to get on TV and get to show off all my old junk. And like, those are my favorite anyways. So that's how I wrote Take Care, Everybody.
So my favorite episode of American Pickers is when they find the original Von Dutch inscribed badass motorcycle in some barn, like in, you know, in Timbuktu. I mean, those guys, they are they're treasure hunting.
Yeah, yeah. And they're finding such, and they, you know, I'm a history nerd, so I love like the storytelling behind the history of each piece and everything. So yeah, it's a very inspirational show.
I mean, if I, you know, in my next life, I would either be a musician or...
I mean, how cool would it be to be a picker?
A picker.
Yeah, that killer job.
I mean, the personalities that they meet.
Yeah.
Right?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
That's so funny. So in all your albums, the three that you've done, what, if someone was to say, like, what's the best representation of Jacob Furr? What's the song that you would go to?
Oh, man. That's a good question. I would say the best representation would probably be either Branches or Mockingbird. And those are off the first album, which is really interesting. But those two songs mean a whole lot to me.
Didn't you write Branches when your wife was
struggling? Yeah, I wrote that in the hospital.
In the hospital,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't know that context about it, it's not that kind of a song. Like, it's like describing it with that context here makes it sound like this is like real bummer of a song. It's not at all. It's like, it's a really pretty song and I love it a lot. I don't think it's a sad song at all, which is funny and weird, but yeah, the Branches is like my favorite one.
Why would that be the best representation of you?
Just cause it's in like a major key and it's like all about love and, it's got a cool guitar part. Like, I love little guitar parts. Like, the intro to that song is like this, like, doon, 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 that goes to this, like, weird 7-chord. I just love little things like that. So, it has a lot of things that I really like and try to keep incorporating in later on. So, I can hear parts in later songs that are coming from that sort of idea for Branches. So,
right.
Yeah. And lots of birds. I have lots of birds in my songs. So, that song's like all about birds.
That's cool. All right. So, that was one of your first songs. And then we talked about really the last track of the last album, which is Turning, which is again about a new love potentially. And you mentioned the relationship that you're in now.
Yeah.
You know, since when your wife passed, how long was the process for you to sort of put yourself back out there? You know,
like,
Was it a bit?
It took a little bit. I mean, being that young when it happened, I think had a lot to do with, getting back out quickly, almost within 2 years, maybe, just because like when something like that happens to you when you're that young, what I've now realized in hindsight is it's not that the heart repairs fast, it's just life is moving so quickly at that point when you're 26 that having something like that doesn't stop the flow of everyone else's life around you, and it doesn't stop the flow of your life, and so you have to learn really fast how to incorporate that stuff into it. And that's like the unique challenge of grieving when you're in your, you know, early 20s, that not a lot of people,
yeah,
there's not a lot of resources out there for it. And there's not a lot of people that talk about it. Cause
I mean, I think people so that young. Age,
yeah,
you're so young.
Yeah. People that age are just sort of expected to pick up and move on because you can, you're young and you have the energy to hop back into life in general. So yeah, it wasn't like a long time afterwards, but it wasn't, you know, it was like a year and a half or so, something like that. So yeah but it's been, yeah, it's been an interesting journey ever since then, like trying to sort of reintegrate yourself into life with this sort of thing that, like, because I don't hide it, right? Like, it's on a website. You can like read about it on the, it's a main part of the art that I've created. It's a main part of my life story. So yeah, it's an interesting challenge to sort of incorporate that into daily life when, you know, I'll meet like older people that, will sort of judge me for being a young guy that doesn't have any experience. And I'm just like, you just have to eat it. Sometimes be like, that's fine. Like, you can think that about me because, you know, it's okay. But I've been through some stuff, you know?
No, seriously.
So, yeah.
Well, I would imagine also that being a musician probably doesn't make dating more simple, right?
No. Yeah,
so when you take the history that you've had and the heartbreak and the tragedy, and then you add the fact that, like, your profession and lifestyle, it can't be easy.
It's not a good combo.
Yeah.
No, it's really not. I mean, it is for the right person, but yeah, it's not easy to sort of figure out that puzzle and be like, hey, this is what I do for a living. Also, I have this whole thing. And also that whole thing, that story is like
part of
the main piece of art that I create all the time,
right?
You know? So yeah, it takes a special person to be able to handle that. And,
yeah, they gotta be really, really secure, right?
Yeah. Really secure. And just, yeah, but it's also taken me a long time to like become the person that can sort of talk about those things and not let it affect me in my daily sort of stuff, you know? So it's a two-way street. It's not just like looking for somebody like just accept you, you know, as you are. You have to be like, okay, how am I putting myself back into the world? And am I doing it in this like respectful way to the past and to, you know, whoever's around me right now? So
yeah. Well,
it's tough.
Yeah, good for you.
It's a tough line to walk. I'm not going to lie.
No, I can't imagine. So in terms of where you're at with your career, I think, you know, you make albums, you perform, and I think I saw where you teach guitar.
Yeah, right? I teach guitar 3 days a week.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And it's all people of all ages, right?
Yeah, it's people of all ages, and that was a post-pandemic thing. A friend of mine, like, had a music school and said, hey, do you want to come do this? And I was like, yeah, I need money. So I started doing it, and yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's very challenging, like, and very mentally taxing, but it gives me good structure for my week. And it gives me, like, I'm learning stuff all the time. Like, I have to show people how to do stuff on the guitar. And, like, oh, I don't know how I did that, but, like, let me, like, relearn this thing and show you how to do this. So it's been a good thing to do. So
that's great.
It helps.
Yeah. No, that's good. What's interesting in some of the conversations I've had, there's a guy that's in Nashville, actually, Wyatt Edmondson, and I talked to him in January. He's one example, but really it's almost everybody. I'm really impressed with, like, the hustle of musicians. You know, a lot of people would think, oh, they're the ones that are, like, you know, artsy and just care about, you know, the craft and looking good or sounding good and stuff. But for the most part, there's so much going on behind the scenes that, you know, I really appreciate the hustle. And, like, the teaching guitar is an example of that.
It's a whole lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because... Yeah, you've got to be hustling on your promotion side. Mm. You got to be hustling on your, like, you got to create more stuff. Like, you have to, you're there to make music. Like, that's the life that you chose. But then, yeah, also teaching guitar is like having another job, like, on top of all of that job, you know. And so it's hard to keep them separated sometimes.
Right.
And, like, it's hard to still love guitar after 3 days of teaching guitar sometimes. And you're like, man, I really need to sit down and write some stuff, but I just do not want to play guitar right now. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hustle, and you just gotta do it these days. It's the way to do it.
You gotta break out the banjo.
Yeah. I had a banjo that I sold for rent one time. So.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. All right.
This is Jacob Furr, and this is my song Turning on the Curious Goldfish podcast. Open all the windows, open all the doors. I'm ready to be ready, I'm not afraid anymore. And take me at my word, love, take me as I am. The time has come to sweep up the best of broken plans. Well, outside, the sun and moon are turning. Inside my heart, there's a turning too. And I don't know what set this in motion, but I'm happy it led me to you. Tonight you will be mine, love, and I will be yours. And when the morning comes, love, and it all begins again, I'll hold on to your memories like I hold on to your hands. Well, outside, the sun and moon are turning. Inside my heart, there's a turning. And I don't know what set this in motion, but I'm happy it led me to you.
Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Curious Goldfish. Please follow and subscribe to the podcast and on social media. Also, tell your music-loving friends about us too. Until next time, stay curious.